Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Beyond the Batcave. This is the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. My name is Andy Piper, and I am your co-host.
And I'm your other co-host, Taylor Jackson. Welcome back, everybody.
So here we are on this crisp Saturday morning. It's been a wonderful week. Trailers have been dropping out of the air like flies tend to drop out of the air sometimes when they die.
Oh.
We're going to talk about some of them.
The flies or the trailers?
The trailers.
Okay, good.
And we've had tons of news over the last 3 weeks that we've just neglected to get to. So we will make our amends for that and talk about all the big points. We're not going to hit every single thing we missed, but we'll talk about a good majority of it. And that's coming up next after this message.
We hope you've enjoyed our message of silence. And we did not get paid very much for that message. Anyway, so let's jump right into the trailers. So, the biggest one is the Wonder Woman trailer. We got this Thursday morning, bright and early. And, Andy, what did you think of the Wonder Woman trailer? Kind of first impressions.
Oh, so, it was pretty awful. I had a previous engagement. I watched the trailer like 5 minutes before my event started, and I couldn't watch it again for over an hour, and it was killing me because I just needed to see it again. My mind was absolutely blown, and I'll talk about the high point for me. It was how epically action-packed this movie looks to be. We got a little bit more glimpses of fight choreography and just general visual effects during fight scenes, and it looks like based on that alone, I will be getting my money's worth from this ticket because I love that kind of stuff in movies. I find Zack Snyder's style to be just heavenly, celestial even. And it looks like he's had a little bit of influence on this movie. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he helped with the writing. He's an executive producer on this. And I think we can see some of his fingerprints on the way this movie looks.
Well, just especially like in the slow-mo sequences. That's definitely that's a Snyder thing, just in their style and how they're portrayed. And there's a lot of his footprint here.
Yeah, so do you have any favorite scenes from that trailer?
I liked it a lot. Some of the new little slow-mo action shots we get are really cool. Like when she breaks through the window, I think is beautiful. And that like kind of wrist block slash kick that she gives is really awesome as well. But I just love how the trailer opens too. And seeing Diana on Themyscira. And just getting that really beautiful wide shot of Themyscira is just
That was very cool. We have a better idea of what it looks like as a whole now.
Yeah, and it's just so colorful and so bright. And I really love the contrast that it gives between Themyscira and diving into World War One, and how there's almost no color when she enters the world of man.
Yeah, it's true.
I just really like that contrast. It was there in the last trailer too, but it wasn't quite as drastic for me. So those were kind of my little highlights. We did see some new things, and there wasn't a lot new, which I greatly appreciated, because as we've kind of talked about here a little bit, one of the biggest marketing downfalls for me of recent superhero-ness is Batman v Superman, in that we saw Doomsday when we didn't want to see Doomsday, or at least in my opinion, I didn't. That just irked at me a little bit. Anyway, so I was happy to see in this trailer there wasn't anything plot-shattering and something that I didn't already know. It was just kind of new views at things that I was already seeing there. But we did see some new things. We get to see a little more of the fight between Themyscira with the soldiers as well. And we actually see, I mean, we don't see it all the way, but we see what looks to be like an Amazon warrior being shot. And the rap actually picked this up a little bit. And they said that in the beginning of the trailer, a classic death comes to the big screen in the tragic epic moment. It says Menelippi swoops down to launch an aerial attack on her gun-toting foes, only to be shot down right behind Dana and Trevor. Diana and Steve. This moment calls back to 1991's War of the Gods number 4, when Melanippe took a hit for Hippolyta and was killed. So I just thought that was kind of cool. And there's also when she saves Steve from the, I don't know what they are, gangsters in the alleyway.
Oh, yeah, we don't know their motivations or anything.
Yeah, but we don't know who they are, but it's a really cool scene. And I hadn't caught this. I guess I'm not a big enough Superman fan, but a lot of people were calling out that Patty Jenkins is a big Superman 78 fan, because apparently that happens in there as well.
Yeah, it looks almost exactly the same.
Especially with Steve catching the bullets and everything. So, I don't know. Did you notice anything else new that you liked seeing in this trailer, Andy?
Yeah, one thing that I thought was pretty cool, looks to be maybe a thematic element that we'll see, is we've got two instances of Diana looking as a bullet goes by her in slow motion. Near the beginning of the movie, I assume, when Menalippi, was that her name? You know, my pseudo-Greek pronunciation is not great. I'll just throw it out there now.
You've got 7 months to prepare, so you're good.
Yeah, so she watches that bullet go by her, and presumably it finds its mark, strikes down this Amazon warrior, and then we see her in what seems to be a climactic moment of the film, emerging from the trench. In other trailers, we've seen she knocks down a mortar round with her shield, and then she watches this bullet come by in slow motion as she deflects it off her bracers, and it looks to be like a full 180. We've seen her watch a bullet, you know, go and kill one of her comrades, and now she's watching another bullet come by and just blocking it. It looks like it'll be a cool moment of, I don't know, it'll just kind of mirror that first moment in the movie.
That is cool. I hadn't thought of it quite that way. And I like that you brought up kind of the theme as well, because there's a lot of things that give me hope for where the DC universe is going. And a lot of like the light and hope that's going to come from Justice League as well. Now, obviously, we don't know how Wonder Woman ends, and we can kind of assume it doesn't end on a super happy note. Otherwise, Wonder Woman wouldn't have left the world of men and kind of gone to hiding forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you can see in both Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, a lot of people complained because it was really dark, and even the themes like weren't super uplifting and hopeful. In Man of Steel,
no, they're very heavy.
Yeah, in Man of Steel, Clark is questioning whether he should even save people and whether he should, you know, become and use his powers. And in Batman v Superman, it's like, well, do we want superheroes and that sort of thing? Where here in Wonder Woman is saying, I love her line there, it's like our sacred duty to protect people, and I am the one who will do this, you know, mm-hmm. to essentially paraphrase it. I just love that she just sees herself as an ambassador for protecting the innocent. And that's kind of what we gleam off of for our superheroes. I like that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I'm really excited about, I've already mentioned the fight choreography, but as I think about it a little bit more, it looks to be very unique. We haven't really seen things like this before. The closest thing I can think of is The Matrix. It has a little bit of that feel to it. Mm-hmm. But also, there's not really another superhero out there or superheroine who fights with a lasso, and that looked to be very unique, the way she was just performing with that lasso, you know?
Yeah.
It looked almost like a dance. Very cool.
Yeah, we got a good shot of her essentially whipping somebody to the ground after having them caught up in the lasso, which I thought was... The first time I saw it, it kind of took me back a second.
Yeah.
Even in animated and stuff, like, I don't know, I feel like we use the lasso to, like, grab things or tie people up.
Yeah, never get very creative with the lasso. I've never seen anybody get creative with the lasso.
That was almost like a Green Lantern use.
Yeah.
Like, where you just grab somebody and throw them around. That was really cool. One thing that I noticed as well that actually had pointed out to me by another podcast that I hadn't quite picked up on, which I thought was really cool, was the idea of Diana having to go through a sort of trial to get her sword, shield, and uniform.
Mm-hmm.
She gets her shield first, and then we see her like drop down in front of her sword, and then we see her with her sword and shield in front of her uniform. And so I don't know if it's going to be like this trial or there's these things blocking the way for her to get these things. It's interesting. I don't know how it'll be set up, or maybe it's the way she'll be allowed to enter the world of men, or maybe trying to keep her from doing so. I'm not quite sure. But I thought that was kind of an interesting little take and something that I think would be kind of cool. And would love to get to see more of Themyscira. I am very much looking forward to seeing more of this world.
Yeah, I as well. So just two more things I want to point out of my own personal opinions, and then we've got a couple little rumors that may have come out through this. The first thing was, just to stop pouring praise on this trailer, I might get a little hate for this. I'm not a huge fan of recycling the Hans Zimmer Junkie XL theme in this movie. It doesn't seem to fit to me with the tone. Because we get... I liked the other music that was in the trailer. I don't know if that is part of the actual score or if that's just trailer music, but I liked it and I thought it fit. And then it was just very jarring to come back to that, you know, electric guitar driven theme that's from the Doomsday fight. And I thought it fit very well in Batman v Superman, but I don't like it here.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it. I do agree that, like, if we're going to see this theme, there's probably a more appropriate musical word for it that I'm blanking on at the moment. But anyways, if we're going to see that musical theme in the score of Wonder Woman, I don't see it fitting super well as well. But I do like that they've kind of stuck with that being kind of her cue music.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge success. People love that song, including me. I thought it was great that she entered right on that mm-hmm. on that moment in the score, but it just doesn't seem to fit into this world of World War One.
Yeah.
It fits with Doomsday and Batman and Superman and fire and destruction all around them, but...
But I do like the idea of you hear this theme and you think Wonder Woman. And so, like, even if I'm just walking down the street and I hear that, I'm going to look around and
it's
I'm
true.
Like,
it's undeniable.
Yeah, it's... And I mean, you think about...
They're kind of building her a brand, really.
Exactly. Batman doesn't quite have one in this universe yet. But Henry Cavill does as well. If you hear, like, little pieces of his score from Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, you're
Man
like,
of Steel, iconic.
Like, that's Superman, you know, like... So I think they're just trying to do the same thing of you hear this little tune and you're like, man, there's Wonder Woman. So, cool. Yeah, we had a couple other little rumors that we, that, I don't know, I think this trailer gives a little more strength for. They were both floating around before that, but I think there's some weight behind them with this. So the first is Elena Anaya's character, which is the one that has kind of the clay
porcelain. She's got a porcelain, like, jaw, cheekbone area.
And that's covering her covering her face. And there are rumors out there that are saying that she is a Wonder Woman villain and called Dr. Poison. And so if you look up Dr. Poison, there's actually two iterations of Dr. Poison. But I feel like where she shows up in this trailer is very much supporting kind of the Dr. Poison alley. Because we always see her when they're experimenting with some gas.
Poison. I don't know. I just said poison a bunch of times.
You did.
Just really, she was there when poison was there.
Yeah.
Also, it looked to be like that gas was so nasty. They had the gas mask inside that little glass container and it was just like corrosive and eating away at it.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like they were putting a little bit of emphasis on how horrible World War One was. And, you know, so Steve Trevor called it the war to end all wars, which is what they called it back then because they didn't know there was going to be another one. But, yeah, this was... I'm very excited. This is going to be a unique movie.
Yeah, and I do like it as well because, I mean, a little bit of a history tangent here. Just I think I like it because so many movies are World War II, which I think they're great movies. But we don't get a ton, at least in my experience, about World War I. And this was a big war. Because it was the first kind of global world war, but also because of these new advances in technology. You know, every war before World War One, it was just, you know, cannonballs and sharp things to stab people with and, you know, just shooting people. But this is the first one where we have gas and we have some automatic weapons.
Yeah, there were weapons introduced in World War One that have since... Countries have agreed to not use them because they are too terrible. Like, you don't see mustard gas. You haven't seen it since 1919 because of this. Soldiers drowning in their own blood on the battlefield is not something anybody wants to be a part of.
Yeah, and that's what made this war so horrific. And, you know, like you said, the war to end all wars. And so that in and of itself fits with the theme of World War One, having Dr. Poison there. And so I think that's really cool. And I just think it's kind of a cool kind of throwback to a war we don't talk about quite as much.
Okay, so Elena Anaya, Dr. Poison, possibly.
I don't know.
I think that's as good as confirmed for me. Maybe you're a little more skeptical.
Well, I just don't know. Maybe she'll never get the name Dr. Poison.
Yeah, very true.
Like, they might just give her... I don't know if... I need a Wikipedia to see if Dr. Poison had a real name. But, I don't know. Dr. Poison seems like a very golden age name to me. And I wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear her called that, even if that's what they were referring to.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to be very creative to get this kind of name in there. If you remember what happened in Man of Steel, they really just sidestepped it the whole time. Like, nobody officially named him Superman. Just suddenly they were calling him Superman, and the general's like, what? Who's that? And he's like, the alien. That's what they're calling him now. Like, oh, guess what? That's what we're calling him now.
Yeah.
If they wanted to do that, they could do something very similar. But who cares? Dr. Poison's not iconic in any way.
That's true.
She's a D-list villain.
Mm-hmm.
She appeared in one episode of Batman the Brave and the Bold, in which... Oh, I'm going to struggle to remember this. I think David W. will help us out. It's an episode where they go to, like, a bar that is for D-list villains.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Dr. Poison is the bartender in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's surrounded by other people that are, like, villains you never hear anything about.
Which I think is great that exists.
Yeah, I'll look that up after. Anyway, so that's the only other time I'd ever seen or heard of her. And only in hindsight. Like, in that moment, I had no idea who the bartender was when I was watching that episode.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, one more thing I wanted to say. I'm kind of a martial arts nut. I really like martial arts, and it looks like the fight choreography for Diana herself is heavily influenced by capoeira, which is very cool. And you can tell that by any time you have like a kick where you're inverted, a hand on the ground and a leg swinging up, it's just very indicative of capoeira. So I'd be really excited to see if that's what they have, because that's some really cool martial arts stuff.
Well, maybe capoeira came from the Amazon.
Yeah, it didn't come from Brazil. That's just a myth.
Maybe that's where Themyscira is.
So we'll keep an eye on that, and I'll keep you updated. I really love the martial arts in these movies. I thought they were really cool.
Yeah.
There was actually a super highly regarded capoeira practitioner in the climatic Martha fight during Batman v Superman. Not the one where he's saving Martha, not the Batman v Superman fight. It's the African-American guy with huge dreads. He's a super famous, well, famous is a relative term, but he's a capoeira practitioner. He's one of the last guys standing against Batman, so it was cool when I saw him in there. Anyway.
That's cool.
Well, let's just move on from this, I guess. We don't need to talk about martial arts all day. I mean, you guys probably are a little bit interested in it if you're Batman fans. We're talking about the master of 127 martial arts here. He's no slouch.
That's true. And this last little thing from the trailer, another rumor that gets kind of strengthened, I feel, and Andy feels as well, is Danny Houston's character. We know he's kind of the main villain, as it seems, but we don't necessarily know who he is. There have been rumors, and I think they carry a lot of weight, that he is Ares, the god of war. And I don't know, I think... Well, I guess I'll let you go first, Danny. What are your thoughts on him being Ares?
If it's not Ares, I think it's a big missed opportunity. Because thematically, we were talking about World War One, how it's a big escalation from any war we've had in the past. Surely the God of War would be involved in that.
Yeah.
And if not, I think it's a mistake. So we see a scene in the trailer here where Diana is going head-to-head against Danny Houston in a sword fight. And it just strikes me as weird if it's just some random general she's fighting with a sword. Like, who can stand against Diana one-on-one with
a sword? The power level there is just way too much of a mismatch.
Yeah.
It's not a god of
This is what they're holding back, I think. I don't think we will ever see him as Ares in a trailer.
Hope not.
I hope not. But I think at some point during that sword fight, he will shed his human guise and he'll reveal himself as Ares.
I'm curious what that will look like. Because in animated and in the comics, you know, Ares and things, they have this very distinct style, and I'm curious, we haven't quite seen something like that in the DCEU yet. I mean, I think the closest thing I can think of is like Steppenwolf.
Ares and Steppenwolf look a little similar to my recollection,
so I'm curious how it will contrast from something like a Steppenwolf. I'm just curious how it'll look. It'll be good. Hopefully we get to see that. Cool. Yeah. Well, that's all I have on the trailer itself. I can't think of anything
else. Oh, I got one more thing to say.
Oh, yeah.
So I think a rumor that had been going around is that the movie itself will begin and end in the present. And the trailer looks like it kind of supports that, at least.
Uh-huh.
We do see her saying things like, I used to want to save the world.
Yeah.
And that indicates that she's talking about her past. And then we flash back to Themyscira and the beach and the soldiers. And then there's also, if you look at that scene right at the beginning where she's pulling out the photo and looking at it, the briefcase and the letter that it has with it, they both have the Wayne logo on them. So clearly that was sent to her by Bruce. So I'm thinking we'll probably get a Batman cameo in this movie, because maybe they'll just put him in every movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I'll get tired of that. I mean, I will.
At least a Bruce Wayne cameo. Yeah. I don't know if we'll see Batman, you know, in the
probably
suit.
Probably not.
But yeah, I do think it'll end with, I don't know, maybe something akin to like the Suicide Squad, you know, where they're just kind of trying to...
Yeah, Bruce and Diana.
Yeah, where they're trying to get the Justice League together, where she finally... Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say. We got to remember, this is the last movie before Justice League comes out. So mm-hmm. I think it would lead straight into it, don't you?
Yeah. And I think that, since it is that bridge, I think it does serve as a really nice thematic bridge as well. Kind of going from no hope to hope. That will hopefully resonate from the Justice League as well.
That will probably make the movie lighter overall as well. It's not going to end in the period of World War One where Wonder Woman's like, I'm leaving this world. You guys suck. Like, that's not how this is going to end. It's going to end with her saying, all right, I'm back. Let's go get the Justice League, Bruce. Let's do this thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do, you know? Like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, so we won't end so bleak. It'll end on a tone of hopefulness.
Yeah. So, Wonder Woman, coming soon.
Looks good.
It looks great. I haven't really had any concerns about this movie yet. It's just been pretty...
Nor have I. Although, I'll say this as a bit of foreshadowing for a piece of future news. Remember, everybody, that Patty Jenkins was not the first director of Wonder Woman. There was another one who left due to creative differences. Foreshadow. Okay. Let's just store that tidbit of information away. Let's talk Lego Batman.
Okay.
All right, so Lego Batman trailer dropped approximately one day after the Wonder Woman trailer. Totally unbeknownst to me. I had no idea this was coming.
Oh, yeah.
But it was a big treat.
We've already technically had three of these.
And it's coming out in February.
So, I mean, I wasn't expecting it, like you said. So.
All right, so tell me about your favorite parts of the Lego Batman trailer.
Oh, man. I think I just love the theme. And I think it gets a lot more direction. Because even though we had kind of the plot based off of the last one, I love that this one gives some meaning behind
it. Do we have
the plot?
I still have no idea what's going on. Well,
no, I mean, like, we had some plots.
Yeah.
Because before it was just like, there's a Lego Batman movie. But then we got, like, him adopting the orphan.
Yeah.
And kind of the fun little, like, how does he deal with that? Because this is not a very parent-like Batman, you know? Like,
that's true.
And so
I think we saw the Joker talking for the first time in this trailer, right?
We did.
And then we got the line, we have to stop the Joker. So we can assume that I think the Joker is going to be the main villain.
Yeah. And so, but I really like just kind of the idea of Batman being afraid to have a family again.
Yeah.
And I don't know how deep they'll go into the universe here.
Sorry. He's so relatable. Yeah. Like, let me go ahead and finish.
I don't know how deep they'll go into the universe. Like, I don't know if he's lost a Robin or anything like that. But at least with the Thomas and Martha.
I don't think so. That looks like the first Robin to me.
Yeah.
Do they call him Dick Grayson?
Haven't given him a name yet.
Okay.
At least that I've seen. At least they haven't said it in the trailer.
Yeah.
But I do like that idea. And, you know, you look back at, like, Tim Drake and everything, and that's kind of very true of Batman, and has been kind of been a real struggle for him. You know, kind of like letting people in, because he's lost a lot of the people that have gotten close to him.
Oh my gosh. Voldemort is the voice of Alfred. I didn't know that.
Oh, see, I knew Ralph Fiennes was in there. I didn't know who he was.
Crazy.
So,
okay, so on IMDb, it lists him as Dick Grayson. Okay. But I don't think I've heard that in a trailer. I think you're right about that. And IMDb is unofficial.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll find out.
Because it also says that Rosario Dawson is Batgirl / Barbara Gordon, where we never saw her as Batgirl.
We didn't. That's true.
We only saw her as Barbara Gordon. I'm not saying we won't.
We'll find out. Mariah Carey's in this? Holy cow. How do they do this kind of thing with these Legos? I should have looked at this cast list earlier. Cool. All right.
So those are my first thoughts. What were your first thoughts? What did you like?
Okay, so the thing that just really tickles me about this is that this is a movie for a different kind of audience. This is not necessarily... It just really pokes fun at everything that we love about Batman. And in a respectful way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This movie looks like it's going to be chock full of Easter eggs, first of all. But I was saying he's just the most relatable Batman I've ever seen. Because you know how many times I've just sat there trying to get the input right on the TV? And it just makes me laugh to see him, like, sitting in his own little theater, like, trying to get it to go to HDMI 2 or whatever.
You can build a Batwing, but can you?
And then the other one is, like, I remember when he was trying to microwave the lobster and he accidentally put it in for 20 minutes. He's like, no, not 20. Like,
stupid.
Yeah, I love it. I love how I can... This is, like, a normal guy, Batman. He's not hitting things on his first try with the Batarang, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just full of jokes. I think this will be good.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this movie.
Yeah, this is looking great. I think it's going to be a ton of fun, like you've said. I'm curious to see where it'll go, because we know the Joker's probably the main thing behind it, but also if you like stop on that frame where there's all those other wonky villains, like a lot of those seem like they're pulled
from King Tut.
I think there's King Tut. I see Firefly, Man-Bat, and
that's Crazy Quill back there.
Yeah,
Crazy that's Quill. That's a D-list villain if there's ever been one.
So I don't know where they're gonna come in and whatnot, but there's gonna be some wonky stuff going on, and it's just like, you know, the Lego kind of franchise to get out mm-hmm. at, you know, poking fun at all these things. And I love that we got a BVS reference as well.
That was funny.
I thought that was really funny when Joker calls him out, he's not even a bad guy.
Oh,
that was fun.
I felt bad for the Joker when he gets his little crying face.
His little ugly face. Well, he would get jelly about that, wouldn't he?
He would. That's very true to the character.
Oh, yeah.
So, this movie's coming out February 10th. I couldn't be more excited about it, actually. I recently saw the Lego movie for the first time. Not super recently, but like 6 months ago.
Oh, man.
It just didn't seem like one that I wanted to go see in the theaters. And I just let it go, and people started saying it was good. And I was like, yeah, whatever, I'll see it sometime.
Yeah, no, I was actually the same way. Like, the trailers did not appeal to me at all. Well, that's something for a seven-year-old that I would never watch.
Exactly.
But then I was in a film class when it came out, and mm-hmm. everyone in my, like, college-level film class was raving about the Lego movie. And I was like, wait, hey. I need to go see this. So,
well, we gave it a chance. It's awesome.
I love it. It's one of my favorites. So a couple quick things we didn't get to mention about Wonder Woman.
Sorry, did I skip some stuff?
That's okay. They're fine.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just so we do have, we do know who is going to be writing the music, which we've kind of been curious about because, you know, it's kind of getting a while till we hadn't heard about that. But Rupert Gregson Williams is going to be doing the scoring for Wonder Woman. You may know him recently. Some of his stuff is The Legend of Tarzan. He just did the new Mel Gibson film as well, Hacksaw Ridge.
Most notably, perhaps, the B-movie.
The B-movie, actually.
One of the strangest movies that's ever gained popularity somehow.
But, you know, Black and Yellow.
Oh, yeah. That was probably his idea, wasn't it? He's probably the one that wanted Black and Yellow. He's probably still secretly working with the Beast to sue humanity.
Exactly.
We need to do an episode about the B-movie and just dissect how freaking weird it is. It's the weirdest movie I've ever seen.
And then we also got some posters for Wonder Woman. We got three brand new ones that came out kind of around the same time as the trailer. They're just kind of one-word titles. So one says Wonder, one says Power, and another one says Courage. And what do you think about these posters, Andy?
I think they are magical.
Mm-hmm.
They really fit with the other poster we've seen. The colors are gorgeous.
Do you have a favorite?
I like the Wonder poster where she's posing with the sword.
Yeah. I like that one too. I feel like my favorite though is probably Courage, where she's mm-hmm. running.
With the shield out in front.
Yeah.
What a Captain America ripoff.
That's kind of true. It doesn't look just like the Winter Soldier, doesn't it? As a Winter Soldier? Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like the Winter Soldier poster. I was just saying it to be, like, sarcastic.
Oh, now that it does look like straight out.
I mean, Wonder Woman definitely came before Captain America. We all know that. But,
you know.
It looks like the Winter Soldier poster. Well, thanks for helping me point that out, Taylor.
Well, now it can't be my favorite.
Hang on. I gotta look up that poster. I don't know if that's the one I'm thinking of. Let's just use this for the episode, like, picture of the Winter Soldier.
So move on to some news. We'll come back to that. So we do have quite a bit of news surrounding the Batman. We have some idea of when this movie will be coming out. We still don't have anything kind of confirmed, per se, but we have heard from a number of people that we're going to be so Joe Manganiello interviewed said that we're going to start shooting in spring. Jeremy Irons, who is Alfred, said that they're likely going to start shooting in the summer. So they could both be right and it'd be somewhere around May, or maybe not all the actors start at the same time, sort of.
Yeah, I think when we average out those two guesses, we get May.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of where I'm thinking.
I am quite surprised by this, because maybe this is indicative of a little bit of pressure from Warner Brothers, because Ben Affleck's out there saying the script isn't ready, yet all the other actors are like, oh yeah, we're shooting in the spring. So maybe Ben Affleck's like still trying to get convinced by the studio to get on board, hurry up with the script or something.
Yeah, yeah, kind of just like a deadline, like, hey, well, here's what we're hoping for. So, and I mean, when you look at it, May is still 7 months away, so like, they have plenty of time to fine-tune the script until May, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like he's just sitting around working on the script, though, you know?
He's Ben Affleck,
he's working on movies.
Yeah, that's true. But we first heard, like, almost 6 months ago that he was worried about the script and still working on it. So, I mean, it will have been, like, a year by that time for him to work on the script. And a lot of, I feel like, the whole movie process sometimes can happen in a year span. So I feel like with just focusing on the script for a year, I know he's got other stuff to do, but I feel like it'll come out all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have more faith in this Batman movie.
I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I'm not. I've liked Ben Affleck's movies.
Yeah.
I've liked all the ones that I've seen.
But speaking about worrying about Ben Affleck's Batman movie, there has been a bit of news. Where did this news come from?
Okay, let's see who broke it. Give me a sec. I can pull this out. Okay, so this was The Ringer. They published a big story about the movie industry in general. It was called Movies Aren't Dead, But They'll Never Be the Same. Just kind of talking about the way things are in the movie industry right now. And they spoke to Bret Easton Ellis. Okay, so this is going to sound ridiculous even saying it out loud. So Bret Easton Ellis, he knows some executives. In fact, he was having dinner with them. And those executives that he was having dinner with know other executives that are working on the Batman.
You know, pause right there. Every time I have dinner with executives, mm-hmm. which is all the time,
yeah.
I always post about it on the internet and everything we talked about.
Okay, well, I'll save my rant for a couple minutes. Let's get through the actual story first. So basically, Ellis is doing this interview with The Ringer. I'll just read it word for word so I don't, like, I'll try not to let my bias come through yet. Okay. I was having dinner with a couple of executives who know other executives.
We couldn't do it. We couldn't make it through.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Who are working on the forthcoming Batman movie, The Batman. And they were just telling me that there are serious problems with the script and that the executives I was having dinner with were complaining about people who work on the Batman movie. And they just said they went to the studio and they said, look, the script is, here's 30 things that are wrong with it that we can fix. And the executive said, we don't care. We don't really care. The amount of money we're going to make globally, I mean, 70% of our audience is not even going to be seeing this in English. It doesn't really matter. These things that you're bringing up about the flaws of the script. So I do think global concerns play a big part in how movies and what movies are being made, obviously. Okay. So there's a couple things we can break down from this, Taylor. First of all, I think he has a fair point about the state of the movie industry. Why do we keep seeing Transformers movies that suck? Because China loves robots on the whole. They love those Transformers. Those movies make so much money in China. And it's the second biggest movie market, but they consistently add $100 million to big blockbusters. It's a lot of money. I can see why you would want to appeal to that audience. However, something else they're citing is that Ben Affleck saying he's not happy with the script. But what does not happy mean? You know, does it mean he didn't go out there and say there are serious problems with this script? He just said it's not quite where I want it to be yet. We can't read into it.
Sounds like, I mean, this will sound like me reading too much into it, but to me, that vocabulary, that vernacular sounds like fine-tuning.
Yeah, it sounds like something a perfectionist says when they're working on a long paper.
And this is filmmaking. We are full of...
Perfectionists. And I know Ben Affleck, he's on his career. It had a low. It had a decidedly low point around the time of Daredevil, after Daredevil. And he had a big comeback. He's a seriously respected dude now. He's not going to blow this. He's not going to let the studio pressure him into shooting with a subpar script. He's just not going to do that.
And I mean, one piece of news that we're not going to talk about specifically here, but was just like how he recognizes that the Batman is not something that you can fail at quietly.
Yeah.
Like, this is like probably the...
This will be his biggest movie.
This will be his biggest movie. Whether it's good or whether it's bad, he realizes that. It's going to define it. I think his career could kind of hinge on whether or not this goes well.
Okay, so I don't think we need to really say more about this. The only thing I will say is that we had a tweet from Humberto Gonzalez, who is famous for several reasons. He used to be El Mayimbe, but he's shed that persona and is since going by the name of Humberto Gonzalez, which seems to be his real name. Anyway, this guy, I don't know if you're up with the journalism, but he used to be famous for just throwing out totally random stories. Everybody's like, where did he get that from? But that was when he was with Latino Review. He left and he started his own website called Heroic Hollywood, and he's been working with The Wrap. Since then, he has been a lot more respectable, and he's actually broken a lot of big news to be the first one. So I think he does have a lot of inside people, good, respectable sources who tell him the truth. For at least the last 6 months, he hasn't said anything too outlandish.
Yeah.
And he's actually broken some big news. So he tweets out, 100% not true, trust me, wink. This guy has won me over. I used to hate him because he would say the most outrageous stuff about Batman v Superman while I was shooting, but he seems to have picked up some really good sources on the inside. And
whenever I hear his name, like, I may not be following as closely as you, but whenever I hear his name, he sounds like a voice of reason.
Yeah, lately it's been like that. It didn't used to be, though.
Right. And I just, it's not like other names where you just kind of get this red flag of, take this with a grain of salt, you know? Like,
he was the one that knew about Deathstroke
in
the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And he just broke some other big casting news that we'll get to in a minute. Yeah. Like, he obviously is very well connected at this point. Okay. Anyway, I will go on record. I think this is absolutely BS. When you have 3 degrees of separation, and who are the executives that he was having dinner with? Who are the executives who are working on the Batman? How many people do you think have had their eyes on that script enough to know that there's serious problems with it? I don't think that many people see that.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's at the stage where it's at, it's probably not.
Do you remember?
Seen like a lot of people.
Okay. I think I've said this on the podcast before. My favorite book, I think one of my top 5 favorite books, is The Art and Making of the Dark Knight Trilogy.
That's a good one.
And it talks in there about how secretive Chris Nolan was with his scripts. I get the same kind of vibes from Ben Affleck. Like, I haven't heard stories about him, but Chris Nolan would not make copies of his scripts. When he wrote Batman Begins in the Dark Knight, he drove out to Morgan Freeman's place where he was staying, and he sat with him while Morgan Freeman read the script. And when he was done, he took it back and left. Like, if Ben Affleck is anywhere near that secretive, I guarantee there aren't random executives out there having dinner with people who have seen this.
Just in the age of the internet, that's what you have to resort to, though. Like, because anything that gets out anywhere gets eaten alive
this
by all the
goons. This is clickbait, pure and simple.
Oh, yeah.
And it just blows my mind that every single DC movie that has come out after Man of Steel so far, which I guess has just been Suicide Squad and
Batman v Superman,
but also Wonder Woman, they've all had a story just like this, where somebody's like, oh yeah, some executive who will remain unnamed, told me there are serious problems with this movie and Warner Brothers just doesn't care. This is the third or fourth time we've heard this happen.
Yeah. And I don't know of any other franchises that's had this much scrutiny, like, before these movies have come out.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, I'll tell you something that I think did have serious problems, and nobody said this. This exact thing happened with Age of Ultron. That movie had serious script issues, and I think that Marvel was just like, you realize the amount of money we're going to make? Just get it out there.
Oh, yeah.
And Joss Whedon left, and there were some big problems, and it made tons of money, but
we never saw a story like this. Yeah.
So, there...
Granted, we weren't doing a Marvel podcast at the time that that came out.
We weren't. That's true.
We weren't as heavily invested.
I was following several Marvel podcasts, though, at the time, because I like Marvel movies. I think they're really good.
Me too. I'm wearing a Captain America shirt, about to go watch Doctor Strange. So yeah. I mean, I'm a fan.
Anyway, just as time goes on, I'm trying not to sound unreasonable, but I keep getting pushed farther and farther towards the anti-DC bias is real camp. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm trying hard not to believe that, but it just, the evidence is there. It's there. And I don't like it.
Me neither. I wonder how long it'll take for this to
simmer. Yeah, hopefully after Wonder Woman comes out. Like, I think it'll be harder to hate on Wonder Woman because it is a movie that's so progressive in its aims and its vision.
And it's going to be so much more widely loved by a wider audience.
Absolutely. It'll have the same thing, the same effect as Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad was seen by a lot more women than any other superhero movie this year.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Wonder Woman will absolutely be seen by a lot more women. We've got an Israeli actress in the lead role. I mean, it looks like it's going to be really... It's going to grab a lot more people from different walks of life who don't necessarily love superhero movies.
Yeah.
If I had a daughter, you better believe we'd be in there watching Wonder Woman. And I know lots of people who are taking their daughters to see Wonder Woman because they're just so excited about this. I see Facebook friends that don't care one bit about superhero movies sharing this trailer because they're excited to see a woman on the big screen in the lead role. It's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's great. We could go on for a long time about like the demographics of critics and all these things. I'm really excited for Wonder Woman. Hopefully it stems the tide, as it were. And Justice League is looking to hopefully do the same thing as well. We haven't seen a lot of backlash on Justice League yet. Granted, we're a lot further away from it. Odd that we're getting this about the Batman and not something about the Justice League. But anything else you want to say about the Batman right now? I think that's all I have.
Yeah, I think that's about it for me. I'll just give a quick shout out to the... They call it the Mosaic. It's the Man of Steel Answers Insight Commentary Podcast. Listen to the episode entitled Suicide Squad.
I was thinking about that one.
Yeah, it's one of the best podcast episodes I've ever heard. But the host of the podcast breaks down the demographics of the people that went to see Suicide Squad and the demographics of movie critics. And it'll give you some good insight into maybe why we're seeing so much anti-DC bias, if we are seeing it. That remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But that podcast really opened my eyes.
Just the two statistics I can remember from that is about 41% of the demographic for that saw Suicide Squad was women.
Yeah.
But the demographic of Rotten Tomatoes was about 11% women.
Yeah.
And then Hispanic and Latinos were about 35% of the demographic of Suicide Squad viewers. Whereas 5% of the Rotten Tomatoes demographic was...
Yeah. So basically, the target audience for Suicide Squad was not old Caucasian men, which seemed to be who the critics are. Yeah,
that was the other one, was 35 and older is pretty much predominantly all of Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Whereas... I don't think they were catering Suicide Squad at all to 35 and older.
There's a reason it made $745 million.
It's the new generation of superhero films.
Okay, great. Well, let's move on from this. We could go down this rabbit hole forever.
We could, and we have. So, moving on to the Justice League. We've got two little bits of news. First is one from a while back, when we were lost in our abyss of busyness. We got our first look at Mera. And Andy, what do you think of seeing Mera? We got our first photo.
She looks good.
Yeah.
Looks like she matches Aquaman. I mean, this is cool, but I'm not like, I wasn't like waiting with bated breath to see a photo of Mira.
That's true.
But we've heard that she's very powerful. We've heard that she has a complicated relationship with Aquaman, which makes me scratch my head a little bit. Maybe they're not married yet. Maybe it's like I was saying. Maybe we're looking at exile Aquaman right now.
That's what I was thinking. When you said complicated, I thought of, yeah, kind of your possible exileness. Like,
they'll maybe fall in love over the movie, maybe.
Because maybe she's not an exile. She's still in Atlantis. Yeah.
So when he returns to take the throne, maybe that's when we see them kind of come together.
Uh-huh. Yeah, something like that. So I don't think there's much to say. Just excited to see Amber Heard take up the role. So
yeah, this it looks good. It's kind of like this green, scaly...
It matches his armor very nicely.
It matches his armor. It's faithful while still being new and exciting looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have absolutely no problem with this, yet I'm not, like, over the moon about it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because it's Mira. If it was somebody else, I probably would be over the moon about it.
Yeah. And then a last little bit of Justice League news, as we have cast our Steppenwolf. So there are reports that Ciaran Hinds, I'm hoping I'm saying that right, is...
Yeah, who knows?
who is known predominantly for his roles in Game of Thrones, has been cast as Steppenwolf. Now, it's likely that, especially if what we saw in BVS extended footage is what Steppenwolf will look like, that this will predominantly be a CGI Steppenwolf. Maybe a lot like, you know, Ultron and Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
We might not see Ciaran Hinds very much, but at least we'll have his voice. So, I don't know. Any thoughts on Ciaran Hinds as Steppenwolf?
You know what? I don't watch Game of Thrones. It just seems like too big of a commitment for me to get into. Maybe someday I will, but I don't know anything about this guy. But the reaction has been good. It seems like people love him on Game of Thrones. Slap a goatee on him, he's good to go. I don't know. If it's CGI motion capture, I guess it doesn't really matter. But this is kind of in the same thread as the Mira picture. Like, I guess it's bigger news. We have a Steppenwolf actor, but I don't know him.
Especially if he's supposed to be the main villain of the Justice League film, you know? But no, I do like it. I mean, if he is kind of the uncle to...
Darkseid.
Darkseid, right. And so he does kind of have the older feel, I feel like, which will be good. And so, I don't know. It's too early to really say, but I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I just like seeing casting.
Yeah,
you know? It's good. I mean, the movie's shot already, obviously. They're just in post-production right now, but it just reminds me, it warms my heart. We've got a Justice League movie coming. That's good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and these little nuggets of news are good reminders of that. Our dreams are coming true, Andy.
Well, let's move on. Bit of bad news. A little bit of bad news.
I hate to end on a sour note.
I know. Well, we'll have a little bit.
We'll have a little bit after this.
We'll have other stuff to lighten up.
But The Flash has once again lost its director. Rick Famuyiwa has stepped away from the project. While he hasn't specifically said all the details, it is mostly having to do with creative differences is the reason for the leave.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people are kind of upset about this. And I don't know, Andy, what's your take on this news?
I think it's a bummer. I do. I don't think the sky is falling, though. He said it was due to creative differences, and I believe that. Because the director, Rick Famuyiwa, I never know if I'm saying his name right, but Famuyiwa, maybe that's right.
I don't know.
Who knows? Anyway, I feel like he was saying how he wanted to bring some of his own soul, his own humor into this movie. The only other movie I know of him is Dope. And to me, what that translates into is we were going to have a little bit of an edgy Flash movie. And maybe Warner Brothers just didn't want that. And he just felt like, you know, I can't come here and be a puppet for this production, you know? And he just didn't want to do it. It kind of sucks because he rewrote the script. He cast a lot of people and lots of people that he had worked with on Dope, costume designers. The lead actress that he cast was in that movie as well. And now they're all there and he's gone. So I'm a little more worried about this than I was when the first director was fired or left or whatever happened. Because he was totally untested. Was it Seth Graham Smith? Was that his name?
Uh-huh, yep.
So he was primarily known as an author of pseudo-historical novels like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I read both of those. I enjoyed them. I thought they were fun. But never was I struck with, dang, I think this dude should be writing movies. I never thought that.
Specifically The Flash.
Yeah. Like. Anyway, I hope they find a new director. I hope they do it soon. But I don't think it's the end of the world. Like I said before, Wonder Woman had two directors. And Batman 89 had a ton of directors before Tim Burton. Tim Burton wasn't the final choice. And that turned out to be a stone-cold classic that people swear by to this day. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, no, I don't really have much to add. I mean, a lot of people are talking about kind of this delicate balance between the vision of what Warner Brothers wants for the DC universe and kind of what the creative filmmakers want for this as well. And so I think that's a really tough balance to play, especially where they've kind of taken heat for their first couple goes at these films. And so I don't know where exactly I stand on it. I mean, I did hear some strange things. I mean, things that I was slightly worried about with The Flash, like mainly being like Captain Cold was supposed to be in like a mech suit. And then the first thing that comes to my mind is,
did you hear that? Well, yeah. I didn't ever hear about that.
And I don't know if it was just internet clickbait or, you know, just some more founded rumors. But then the first thing I think of there is like, well, what are they going to do with Mr. Freeze? You know, like that sort of thing. But anyways, so it's possible, especially now that we have Geoff Johns, like he's very heavily invested in The Flash. So I think it could just be that the Geoff Johns vision wasn't quite lining up with the things that he was going for. So like you said, sky's not falling. But it is kind of concerning to see this happen a lot for kind of a relatively new go run. So,
yeah, so we'll hope for the best there.
Yeah.
But as for now, we're going to introduce a new little segment into our show here. We're struggling for a name still, so if you guys have any ideas, we're open to them. But right now we're going to induct a member of the Honorary Bat Family. We've been searching through the news for Batman-related things, and I found something that just warmed my heart, Batman related. So, there's a man that lives in the Houston area. His name is David. Not a last name here. Anyway, so this guy named David, he's basically wearing an Arkham Knight bat suit, and he's got like a three-wheeled vehicle that he painted up to look like the Batmobile. It looks pretty sick, to be awesome. I mean, to be honest, it is awesome. So, anyway, he drives around in Houston looking like Batman. And just stopping and saying hi to kids on the road. Once in a while, he'll pop into a hospital. And it seems that he does this for no other reason than to give people the experience of seeing Batman driving around in the Batmobile. And for that, we would like to induct David, the Houston Batman, into the Honorary Bat Family.
Can we induct him as an Honorary Caped Crusader?
Yes, he's an Honorary Caped Crusader. Anyway, this is a great story. I don't even know how to give credit for where we got this from. Some Houston, Texas websites.
KHOU News.
Yeah, if they get in touch with us and they're mad at us for stealing their story, then I guess we'll deal with it then. I doubt it.
Well, we just blasted their news to the interwebs. You know, so they can thank us, actually.
Because, I don't really care if Houston news stations listen to us. We've already got the right people. Zack Snyder listens to our podcast.
Adam West.
Adam West listens to the podcast. Executives listen to our podcast.
And executives who know other executives.
The friends of the executives are listening right now. They're the ones we care about. And
the person who sent Patty Jenkins that letter also listens to us.
Exactly.
They've changed their ways.
So anyway, welcome to the Honorary Caped Crusader, David, of KD, Texas.
And then we also have a great bat blunder, don't we, Andy?
Bat blunder, that's a good one. Okay, good work. That's a quick mind.
I think.
So I've got a couple of these, actually. Some just truly shameful people who have tried to take up the mantle of the bats, and they've done it in the totally wrong spirit. Okay, so here's one from KOMONews.com. This is from Aberdeen, Washington. So, basically what's been happening is, imagine you're... Well, okay, so there's just a father there. He's got like a six-year-old daughter. One day in the middle of the day, it's like noon or 1 o'clock or something, he gets a call on his cell phone, and this guy's like, I kidnapped your daughter. And he's like, what? And he just hears a six-year-old girl crying in the background. He's like, this dude's kidnapped my daughter. And then he's like, wait, who is this? And the guy just says, Batman. And then he hangs up the phone. Okay. So this dad immediately calls his daughter's school, finds out she's still sitting perfectly fine in her first grade class. And he's like, well, I guess that's over. He does not have my daughter. But this happened to several people in this Washington area. The guy seems to have a little bit of technical knowledge because he's spoofing phone numbers. The number he's calling from looks like it's coming from Mexico, but it's obviously not. So anyway, hopefully they track this guy down. Because, yeah, if any of you out there maybe live in Washington, you have information about this, please call the Grays Harbor County Sheriff's Office and turn in this imposter.
That imposters do us no good.
Yeah, so...
there's never been a positive spin on a bat imposter.
Anyway, so just... this guy sucks. If you want to be part of the bat spirit, do not do this. You don't kidnap people's daughters. You don't even say that you've done it. Like, what's the point here? Batman would never do this.
I mean, unless the only reason he would ever do it is to flush out some villain who has... I couldn't even see him doing that to, like, yeah. Deadshot's daughter. It's just not the bat way.
He wouldn't do that in front of his daughter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Cool.
Anyway, that guy, we'll put him in the pile of bat blunders or whatever we're calling it. Okay, one more. This one is... he's almost there. He's almost got the right spirit of Batman, but he's just not quite. All right, so a Bronx man is clinging to life when he was attacked by a person dressed up as Batman at a Riverdale bar's Halloween party on Saturday. So basically what happens is this guy starts an argument with a dude dressed as Batman.
Which is never a good idea.
No, and the guy dressed as Batman and seven of his friends beat this guy to within an inch of his life. So, where did he go wrong? First of all, we have to assume this guy wasn't a criminal. He wasn't caught in a criminal action. He was just trying to celebrate Halloween with his friends. He started an argument with Batman. And first of all, Batman does not need seven people to help him beat up one guy. He would never do that. Also, you just can't leave him in critical condition, like clinging to life. That's a little too brutal, even for Ben Affleck's Batman.
Did they catch the guy? I don't even know.
The Batman guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like they have him.
Okay.
But anyway, so that's a bat blunder if I've ever seen one.
Oh, totally.
So we eschew you. Did I pronounce that right?
Eschew?
Yeah. We eschew, like, you. Cashew. If it's not a nut, it's a verb. We exhort you. If you want to become more like Batman, do it through wholesome ways. Go to the Himalayas, seek out shadowy organizations to train you. But don't go into bars and beat people up. Don't call people and tell them that you kidnapped their daughter. That's not what this is about.
It's not the bat way.
This is a family. And we help each other. So anyway, those are your three external bat stories of the week.
Yeah. So let us know if you like this new little segment. We might just throw it out there.
I thought it was fun finding these stories.
I liked it. It's fun. And they're, you know, some of the unsung heroes or unsung villains. That I guess need a little attention.
Unsung villains, come on. Okay. Alright.
Anyways, that's all we have for you today.
Wait, we do have one more thing.
We do have some listener feedback.
Yeah, I asked for some questions on Twitter. So we got one really hefty question. Alright. So this is from... I don't know if he's a frequent listener, but I've interacted with him a lot on Twitter. His name's Jim Bob Squarepants. Probably his real name. I can see that on his birth certificate. Anyway, he says, you're tasked with launching a brand new Batman title. Who is your chosen writer and artist? Can be anyone, alive or dead. So, fascinating question. Caught us totally off guard. We were kind of hoping for more of, like, I can do this off the top of my head. But we're going to give it a try. All right. So, for me, I want Ed Brubaker. Who, as far as I know, I don't think he's worked on the Batman main title. I know he wrote, like, a little... he wrote The Man Who Laughs, which I really enjoyed. I liked his perspective on the Joker, and so I'd want to see him write the Batman main title. Ed Brubaker, famous for more of his work on, like, Captain America, I think was probably his most famous character. But for my artist, I'll take Jock. I don't know a lot about Jock, but everything I've seen him draw, I really liked. I think he drew the Black Mirror, and he drew some Green Arrow stuff. But beyond that, I don't know. But that'll be my choice. Some up and... Well, Ed Brubaker is, like, established as one of the better guys out there. But have they worked together? I don't know. That would just be kind of an experiment to me, I think. Ed Brubaker, Jock on the Batman title. That's what I want.
Cool. I don't really have much here. I've said this on the podcast before. I'm still getting caught up on all the great Batman classics as far as the comics go. I probably haven't read enough or seen enough from consistent artists because I'm kind of like hit and running a lot of the classics, and rarely are they kind of made by the same people. But as I ponder the question, the names that come to mind, I mean, I just love the really artistic and iconic styles of Jim Lee or Alex Ross, I think, are some really great ones.
That's interesting to think about, because I don't know if I've ever seen Alex Ross do, like, a weekly or bi-weekly title.
That's
or
true.
Even
he
monthly.
Just does these big events, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's done, like, big, like, artsy novels. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he did one for each member of the Justice League.
That might be a little much to do a title.
Because he paints, I think. Yeah, he does. So, like, you can't... Yeah, I can't imagine him painting, like, 24 pages a month. That would be rough.
Yeah.
But that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. Anyway, good
and
poll.
Then as far as writers go, I mean, I've really liked some of the more recent stuff. Like, we talked about Black Mirror. Like, I think that's some of Scott Snyder's best. I really like that. He hasn't always been super strong for me, but I really like also where the recent Tom King run has gone. So, and this is going to show my not knowledge of comic books, but if... I don't know if Jim Bob, if you've ever read, I don't know if you've ever read like a Dan Brown novel, but Dan Brown has a way of painting his villains. That
are we talking like Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons? Is that the guy we're talking
about?
Yeah,
that's okay. The guy we're talking about. But like he has a way of painting his villains in the books, not necessarily in the movies, that I feel is very indicative of a Batman film. And so I know it's quite the gap to shoot to jump over the comic run. Don't think it'll ever happen. But if we got somebody like that, that just could... I love the kind of the history basis of the Dan Brown novels. That's kind of why I read them. But every time I read his villains, they're utterly creepy and scary. Like, if I ever ran into one of them in real life, I would flee for my life. But anyways, that's my uneducated 2 cents on your question, Jim Bob. But well, thanks for asking.
Yeah, thanks for that question. We love it. Love that kind of stuff. It's challenging, mentally stimulating, beautiful. All right, so we'll leave it off there. We'll wrap up. We'll be back soon with more news. We'll probably talk a little Justice League animated series. Who knows? We're like wild cards over here. We could put out any kind of episode. And
if there's anything that you want to see, please let us know. Feedback on the
show. We'll take episode requests.
Super helpful. So leave us a review on iTunes telling us what you think, as well as just throw us some questions or some feedback at our website, beyondthebatcave.com. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, both as Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. Our Twitter handle is at Beyond Batcave. I'm your co-host, Taylor Jackson.
And I'm Andy Piper, and we're signing off.